The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking, well, a fascinating turn.
Uh-huh.
We're moving away from, you know, the usual history books and economic policy.
Yeah, shifting gears a bit.
Exactly. We're diving straight into the culture we live and breathe every single day, specifically the internet meme.
Right. And we're looking at Lamore Shipman's really critical work, Memes in Digital Culture.
This is such an essential deep dive for you listening in because we're doing something that might feel a bit radical.
It is.
We're going to treat memes not just as, you know, silly jokes online.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
We're treating them as vital, fundamental cultural texts.
Yeah.
Shipman really reframes them brilliantly.
She does.
Making the case that they're like the digital equivalent of folklore and a primary engine of public discourse today.
I really love that framing, digital folklore, because if you want to understand how collective identity gets formed right now,
yeah,
how political movements suddenly ignite or how social anxieties kind of bubble up.
You have to get the logic of the meme. It's fundamental.
It really is. It's the shared language of our digital lives, whether you're like actively creating stuff or just scrolling through your feed.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that's why this book is so important, really. It gives us the tools, the framework to analyze all that internet chaos with, well, genuine scholarly rigor.
Okay, so let's look at the scholar herself, the one who dared to bring academic rigor to, well, cat pictures, among other things.
Oh, yeah.
Who is Lamore Shipman, and what allowed her to be the person to write this pretty definitive text?
Well, Lamore Shipman is an associate professor over at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. She's a leading scholar in digital media, communication theory, that whole field.
Okay.
And her research focuses really heavily on user-generated content, you know, humor online, and the profound social and political implications of all these new media platforms.
Right. But lots of academics study the internet. What was her unique contribution here? Why did it take so long for, like, serious academic focus to turn to something like the meme? Seems obvious now, maybe.
Well, you know how academia can be sometimes. The academic world often initially dismisses user-generated stuff as frivolous or just disposable, right?
Yeah, totally. Not serious enough.
Exactly. Shipman was one of the first to really look past that surface-level humor.
Right.
To say, hang on, there's something deeper here. And she applied rigorous interdisciplinary analysis.
Pulling from different fields.
Yeah. Sociology, communication theory, even linguistics. Bringing all these tools to bear on memes.
So her big innovation was basically legitimizing meme studies, giving it the academic vocabulary and the methods to analyze, I don't know, a frog on a unicycle.
Right.
With the same kind of precision you'd use for, say, a political pamphlet or a piece of classic literature.
That's exactly the innovation. She bridged that critical gap, provided the framework needed to analyze this chaotic, kind of messy world of user-generated content, but keeping that scholarly precision. Honestly, without her work, we probably wouldn't have the sophisticated toolkit we have now for understanding how digital culture actually gets produced and transmitted.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's unpack the central idea of memes in digital culture. What's the core thesis she really wants us to walk away with?
Okay, the main argument, the big takeaway, is that internet memes are way more than just trivial little artifacts.
Right, not just jokes.
Not just jokes. They are powerful cumulative vehicles of cultural transmission. They give us deep insights into social norms, political ideas, how we form collective identities online.
So they're a window into us.
Pretty much. Shipman argues they're actually a dominant mode of communication in contemporary culture.
Okay, dominant mode. Wow. Now, before we go any further, there's this crucial distinction she makes. And I think, honestly, many of us, myself included, probably get this wrong sometimes.
You mean the viral versus meme thing?
Exactly. The difference between something going viral and something becoming a meme.
Yes. That distinction is absolutely critical. It underpins her entire framework. It's fundamental.
So explain it. What's viral?
Okay, so when something goes viral, it's basically a single item, a single text that spreads really widely. Think of like a one-off video. Charlie Bit My Fingers, a classic example.
Right, when saw that.
Billions of views. But
yeah.
You're just consuming it. It's passive. It's linear transmission. One thing, lots of eyeballs.
Okay, clear. But the meme, that's fundamentally different because it involves creation, creation.
Exactly. That's the key. A meme, as Shipman defines it, isn't just one thing. It's a group of cultural items. It could be images, texts, videos that are created with an awareness of each other. They share common characteristics, maybe the content or the form or the stance, the attitude.
So it's like a family of related things, not just one popular thing.
Precisely. The meme emphasizes collective, cumulative, and this is the most important part, creative processes.
Like remixing.
Parody.
Yes. Remixing, parodying, transforming. It's not just a text you consume. It's like a conversation you're invited into. You're encouraged to make your own version.
Ah, okay.
And she traces this idea, you know, all the way back to Richard Dawkins' original biological concept of memes as units of cultural inheritance.
Right, from the 70s.
But she adapts it for the digital age, where user agency, your ability to jump in and change it, is absolutely central.
That changes everything, doesn't it? It means we have to stop thinking just about reach, how many people saw it.
And start thinking about reproduction. How many people were inspired to make their own version?
Right. Okay, so with that definition clear, let's get into her foundational analytical framework. How do we actually analyze a meme? She gives us this tripartite model.
Yes, the tripartite model. This is like the essential lens for understanding why a particular meme works, or you know what it's actually trying to say beneath the surface.
Three parts.
Three dimensions.
Yep.
Every successful internet meme, she argues, operates across these three dimensions: content, form, and stance.
Okay, let's break those down. Content first. That sounds like the what.
Exactly, the what. The ideas, the values, the message, the theme being conveyed. Yep. So if we take the success kid meme, you know, the baby with a clenched fist.
Yeah.
The content there is that theme of celebrating small everyday victories like found parking right outside.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Simple enough. Then there's form. That's the how.
Precisely. The tangible how. This is the structure, the template that you're imitating when you make your own version.
So like the picture itself or the way the text looks.
It can be the specific visual template.
Yeah.
Or specific linguistic patterns. Think about the broken grammar of lol speak from the early cat memes.
Oh, right. I can't has cheeseburger.
Exactly. Or just the specific format of an image macro.
Yeah.
You know, the picture with the white text at the top and bottom. That is the form. It's the set of constraints, the rules that actually enable all the creativity within it.
Okay. Content is the what, form is the how. And the third one is stance. I feel like this is the one that's maybe easiest to overlook.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Stance is the tone, the attitude. It's the way the person sharing or creating the meme is positioning themselves relative to the content and the form.
So is it meant to be funny, sarcastic, sincere, angry?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Is it ironic, sincere, self-deprecating? Is it an outright political critique hiding in humor? Stance is often where the real persuasive power or the political edge lies.
T.I. an example.
Sure. Think about the distracted boyfriend meme. You know the one?
Of course. Guy looking away from his partner.
Right. When someone shares that, maybe applying it to their own life, the stance is often one of humorous self-awareness.
Yeah.
Like acknowledging temptation or maybe prioritizing the wrong thing, but doing it in a funny, relatable way.
Ah, okay. So applying this framework, content, form, stance, it actually turns just scrolling through your feed into, well, conscious cultural analysis.
It really does. You start realizing every meme you see isn't just random noise. It's often a deliberate social statement packaged in a certain way.
Now, Schiffman identifies, I think, 9 different dimensions that help a meme succeed, but she really focuses on 3 as being foundational.
That's right. She highlights simplicity, humor, and participation specifically. User-generated content, or UGC.
Why are those 3 so much more critical than the others?
Well, they're basically the pillars supporting a low barrier to entry. For a meme to take off, it generally needs to be simple enough to understand almost instantly.
Makes sense. Quick hit.
It needs to be funny, or at least emotionally engaging enough to make you want to share it. That's the humor part, usually.
And the third.
And critically, it needs to be easy enough to replicate or remix. Like easy enough that almost anyone can open a basic photo editor or even just type text onto a template and contribute their own version. That's the participation.
So if it's too complicated to make or too serious or too niche,
it often dies out. It lacks that core participatory energy, that invitation for you to join in.
We see that play out perfectly in the different genres she talks about, like image macros, the picture with text thing we mentioned.
Yeah, image macros are a prime example. You get a fixed visual form, the picture combined with variable personalized text. It's a perfect balance of constraint and creativity.
But the ones I find particularly fascinating are the photo fads, because they take this meme logic out into the physical world.
Oh, yeah. Photo fads like planking. Or owling. Remember those?
Vaguely lying face down in weird places.
Exactly. They are maybe the ultimate expression of mimetic performance. The meme isn't just the photo, it's the act of performing this specific, often really absurd action in a real-world place and then documenting it.
So the cultural significance is the shared action itself.
Yeah, it's the act of performing this shared absurdity out in public space. It's like demonstrating collective adherence to this weird digital norm out in the physical world. It's fascinating.
Which brings us to the big so question, really, the reason we're doing this deep dive. The role of memes in public discourse, in politics.
Yeah.
Schiffman argues they're way more significant than just like lighthearted political cartoons.
Oh, absolutely. Much more significant. They function as a form of grassroots political participation, a way for ordinary people to engage in social critique, often bypassing traditional media gatekeepers entirely.
Like a direct line for public sentiment.
Kind of. And she uses two really powerful case studies in the book to show how memes can amplify political messages.
Okay, let's hear them. The first is that now iconic image of the pepper spraying cop at UC Davis, right?
That's the one. The Associated Press photo of Lieutenant Pike casually pepper spraying seated protesters. It instantly became this potent symbol of institutional overreach, of detached authority.
And the internet's reaction?
The mimetic response was immediate and honestly profound. Users started photoshopping him everywhere.
Right, I remember that. He was put into famous paintings.
Classic art, historical moments, scenes from movies, everywhere. And what that did through sheer repetition and, importantly, humor, was subvert his authority.
Awesome.
It didn't argue against his actions with, like, essays or reasoned debate. It visually mocked and diminished the power he represented. The humor itself became this highly shareable weapon for critique.
Wow. Using ridicule as a political tool. Okay, and the second case study.
The We Are the 99% meme, which emerged from the Occupy Wall Street
Well,
movement.
people holding up signs with their stories.
Exactly. And its power lay almost entirely in its simplicity and replicability. It perfectly hits those three key success factors we talked about: simple, participatory, maybe not always humorous, but deeply affecting.
So the form was just paper and a pen.
Pretty much. It was a brilliant format because it acted as what Schiffman calls an anecdotal aggregator. Individuals wrote their personal stories of economic hardship, precarity, debt, whatever it was, on a piece of paper or cardboard, took a photo, and posted it online with the hashtag.
And the effect.
It built this incredibly powerful collective political identity, literally from the bottom up. It gave a human, relatable, and crucially replicable face to these huge, abstract economic statistics and grievances. It made the movement feel very personal and widespread.
That makes sense. Now, stepping back a bit, in the wider digital world, we can't ignore the money side. Memes act as a kind of currency, right, in the attention economy.
Definitely. They're absolutely currency in the economy of attention.
Right.
They're what we often use to barter for likes, shares, validation online. Our time.
And this is where Schiffman talks about that tension, the
Yeah.
clash between authentic, user-driven, grassroots
And
culture,
corporate co-optation, yeah. When brands try to get in on the meme game.
which usually goes badly, right? She calls them forced memes.
Often, yeah. They usually fail pretty miserably because they lack that crucial ingredient, authenticity.
Why does it fail? Is it just obvious?
It usually feels obvious. If a big corporation tries to jump into a grassroots meme conversation and sort of command it or use it purely for commercial gain, users instantly recognize them as outsiders. It feels try-hard.
Right, it breaks the illusion of it being our thing.
Exactly. It contrasts completely with that organic mimetic energy, which comes from genuine participation and shared understanding. It's like the difference between a brand paying millions for a Super Bowl ad, which is a passive, maybe viral attempt, and creating a format that users genuinely want to pick up and remix themselves.
So authenticity born from real user participation,
Yeah.
that's the ultimate currency here.
It really is. If you, as a creator or even a brand, sort of cede creative control, if you invite the community to play with your idea, you have mimetic potential.
But if you try to control the joke too tightly.
You just look like that awkward parent trying way too hard to be cool with the kids. It really works.
Okay, let's try and pull out some core takeaways then. Themes that should really stick with you listening at home long after this deep dive. My first one is about participatory culture, not passive consumption.
Big one.
The whole book signals this fundamental shift in media, doesn't it? Moving away from traditional top-down information flow.
Do this horizontal act of co-creation where users aren't just consuming, they're making and remixing.
Yeah. And maybe a reflection for you is, the next time you're looking at content online, ask yourself, is this just asking me to watch or read? Or is it somehow inviting me to contribute, to change it, to make it my own?
That's a great question to ask. Okay, my core theme would be humor as a strategic vehicle.
The Trojan horse idea.
Kind of, yeah. Memes constantly use irony, absurdity, straight up silliness as this kind of cultural Trojan horse. They use it to deliver sometimes really sharp social or political critiques, but in a way that's highly shareable, easy to digest, palatable.
So the joke makes the medicine go down.
Pretty much. So a reflection here might be, if a political joke or meme seems particularly ridiculous or absurd, try to look past the surface humor for a second. Ask, what's the underlying, maybe serious argument it's actually trying to push? The absurdity is often just the clever delivery mechanism.
Hmm, interesting. And the idea that really resonated with me, the one I keep coming back to, is memes as digital folklore for the 21st century.
Yeah, that's powerful.
They really are like the modern equivalent of shared myths or inside jokes that scale massively, or urban legends. They articulate a community's shared values, their anxieties, their beliefs, often way faster than any other medium can.
It's culture happening in real time.
Exactly. So the reflection is maybe the meme you share today, or even just laugh at, it's not disposable. It's actually part of the cultural DNA of tomorrow. It's how future historians might try to understand our generation's collective consciousness, which is kind of wild to think about.
It is wild. Okay, and one more theme. Let's revisit the idea of template culture and creative constraint.
Right, the form providing the structure.
Yeah. The idea that creativity often flourishes best when it has some boundary, some structure. Within the defined templates, the form of the meme.
Like sonnets forcing poets to be creative within 14 lines.
Exactly like that. So the reflection is, how can we maybe apply that lesson, that constraint, can actually enable creativity to our own work? Or even just problem solving. Sometimes having a fixed structure, a template to work with, actually frees you up to be more inventive with the content inside it.
That's a really practical takeaway. Okay, Schiffman's book is just packed with these ideas that sound simple on the surface but are actually incredibly rigorous underneath. Let's share maybe three core ideas, paraphrased, that really summarize her contribution.
Sounds good.
The first has to be her definitive academic distinction. An internet meme is not a single text that spreads widely, but a group of digital items sharing common characteristics of content, form, and stance, which were created with awareness of each other. That precise definition is key.
Absolutely. And then there's how she frames the whole democratic, bottom-up nature of this culture. Something like, memes should be seen as a new form of digital folklore through which contemporary culture is produced, negotiated, and shared by its participants, rather than being handed down by traditional media gatekeepers. It really emphasizes that power shift away from the old authorities.
Yeah, the power is with the users now. And finally, the book forces us to think about success differently online. The logic is participatory. She basically argues, a meme's success isn't just about how many people see it, but by how many people are inspired to create their own version of it.
Right. It's a metric of engagement, of transformation, not just passive reach or views. A totally different way to measure impact.
Okay, so let's bring this right back down to earth. Practical applications. For you, the everyday internet user listening right now, how can you use this?
Well, I think the main thing is leveling up your media literacy. Honestly, just start consciously using that content, form, stance model when you're scrolling.
Just ask those questions. What's the message? What's the template? What's the attitude?
Exactly. It transforms passive scrolling into active, conscious cultural analysis. You immediately start noticing the subtle social cues, the underlying assumptions, maybe even critiquing the power dynamics embedded in a seemingly simple joke.
Okay, that's for the user. What about for people creating things online? Communicators, marketers, maybe activists?
For them, the application is super clear. Stop chasing the elusive, mythical, viral hit. It's often out of your control anyway.
So what should they aim for instead?
Focus on creating content with memetic potential. Think about making something that's open-ended, that invites participation, that's highly remixable. You almost have to want people to mess with your original creation.
Ceding control, basically.
Ceding some control, yes.
Yeah.
Because authenticity born from genuine user participation will almost always generate more lasting value and engagement than top-down corporate control trying to force a message.
Right. And maybe one last application, particularly for political awareness.
Yeah, I think understanding Schiffman means recognizing that memes often act as this incredibly sensitive real-time barometer of public opinion and, maybe more importantly, public emotion.
Like taking the temperature of the internet.
Kind of. They show you which issues, which feelings, which arguments are truly capturing the grassroots imagination, often much faster and maybe even more truthfully than traditional polling or news reports can. They show you what people are actually feeling and sharing.
That's a powerful thought. So, as we wrap up, what was the thing that most surprised you or resonated most from revisiting this work?
For me, I think it's the reinforcement that stuff we might instinctively dismiss as silly or disposable. The funny picture, the quick video loop, is actually this incredibly complex, culturally profound artifact when you look closely.
Yeah.
The level of sophisticated analysis Schiffman brings to something seemingly so, well, trivial, like unpacking the political power embedded in the simple template of we are the 99%, that depth applied to the everyday, is what's really striking.
I completely agree. My final lasting insight for you, the listener, is pretty similar. It's that memes aren't just some fleeting internet fad. They're not going away.
No, they're embedded now.
They are a vital new mode of communication, deeply integrated into our social and political lives. Mm. And Schiffman's work, this book, it gives us the indispensable key. It helps us move past just passively consuming them and start to actually read contemporary society itself through them.
Well put. It's essential reading, in a way.
Definitely. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.